call is being recorded. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody to our GNSO Council meeting on the 28th of October, 2010. Appreciate many of you calling in at times when it's pretty late in the day for you. Thank you for that. That's appreciated by everyone, I'm sure. Jumping right in, let's do the roll call. Glenn, please.
Pleasure, Chuck. On the call, we have Chuck Gomes, Caroline Greer, Edmund Chun, Adrian Kinderis, Stefan van Gelder, and Terry Davis will be about half an hour late. Tim Roos has not yet joined the call. For the non-contracted party house, we have David Taylor, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Jamie Wagner, Rafik Damak, Bill Drake, Deborah Hughes, Olga Cavelli, and Wendy Seltzer, and Andrei Koleshnikov will be joining us via the audio cast. For staff, we have Margie Milam, Ken Bauer, Alex Kulik, Liz Gaster, Marika Koenig, David Olive, Julie Headland, Sam Eisner, and Dan Halloran, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gerie. And we have just been joined by Mike Rodenbach.
Hello, Glenn.
Hi, Mike. There are apologies from Zaid Jamil, who can't be on the call. It's 1 o'clock in the morning for him, and he has a very early morning court hearing tomorrow. We have apologies from Rosemary Sinclair and from Mary Wong. And Christina Rosette has just joined the call. Thank you, Chuck. Over to you.
And Alan Greenberg.
And Alan Greenberg. Thank you,
and,
Alan.
And Glenn, it's Adrian Kinderis. I got my computer crapped out, but I'm back on my phone now.
I see that. Thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you, Chuck.
Is Tim joining?
Tim, hi.
Okay.
Hey, Glenn.
So we have a full house except for the people who have notified us that they can't be on the call, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Appreciate that. Does anyone, if anyone has a disclosure of interest that you haven't already disclosed and as far as not in your statement of interest, please raise your hand in the Adobe Connect room so we can give you an opportunity to disclose that. As you can see, the main issues today are GNSO prioritization, election procedures for council chair and vice chairs, WHOIS studies, voting procedures when councilors are absent and or must abstain, and disclosure of interest procedures. Does anyone have a disclosure of interest to communicate? Seeing no hands and hearing no one, does anyone have an update to their statement of interest? Note that we did receive new statements of interest from Terry Davis and David Taylor. Thanks to both of you for doing that. I know Terry's not on yet, but David, thank you for submitting that. Anything you would like to add to that, David?
No, I suppose the main point on it, which I was bringing through there, was the fact that we've become as a firm a registrar. So I think the only qualification I'd put on that is our registrar services per se are only two clients of the law firm, so we're not going into business to compete with Adrian or Stefan or anybody like that.
So now you have a big decision to make. Are you going to join the registrar's constituency or stay with the IPC?
I think I'll stay put, thanks.
I'm just kidding.
Chuck, it's Adrian. We wouldn't have him.
Oh, you wouldn't have him. Okay, well. So it doesn't matter anyway. So, all right.
Chuck, I have a quick question, and I know we covered this last week, but just for clarity, just around the statements of interest, do you mind?
Sure, go ahead.
From my understanding, does a statement of interest not... What's the second one called? A disclosure of interest?
A disclosure of interest. We're actually going to talk about that later in the agenda, too, Adrian.
Oh, then I shall bite my tongue until then. Thank you.
Yeah, it'll probably fit better later, but it's a very good question. I'm not minimizing your question. It just is an agenda item, so let's talk about that then, okay?
No worries. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, not a problem. Okay, any comments or suggested changes to the agenda? I'm not seeing any hands or hearing anyone.
Chuck, Adrian again, I do. Hello?
Go ahead.
When we do discuss the Cartagena meeting, are we discussing anything to do with Wendy's suggestions that were sent through after the last call but weren't discussed?
Well, we can. I think we don't have a lot of time on that, but my assumption was, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe it's Stefan and Glenn that can do that, is that we were going to try to incorporate those as best we could in working with the ICANN scheduling team. Is that correct, Stefan and Glenn?
That is correct, yes, Stefan here. I sent an email following the last council meeting suggesting that we do that unless anybody disagreed, and there was no disagreement voiced. So that was my understanding as well.
Now, Adrian, if when we get to that point you do have a suggested change or a disagreement on something, please bring it up at that point, okay?
Yeah, it's not so much that I have a suggestion change nor disagreement. I was happy with what came through. I was just surprised with the council that there wasn't any discussion or debate. But if Stefan put it out there and no one's commented, then so be it. Thank you. That's all I needed.
Okay. All right. Well, we did spend a little bit of time on that in our last meeting, so I think that's probably why. So, all right. Going on then, note that the minutes are from our 7 October meeting are scheduled to be approved today. Let's move on to item number 2, the GNSO project prioritization. Now, it's been a couple months since we've talked about this. Because of very busy agendas, we haven't been able to get back to it since early July or mid-July. So we're going to spend just about 20 minutes at the most on this today. We're not going to resolve anything, but I think it would be helpful if we at least start to get a sense of where the council is, and obviously really representing your various groups with regard to the project prioritization issue. There's a link to the posted project ratings from the exercise that we went through in Brussels, and then on the 15th of July, we had a discussion, and there were quite a variety of comments made. I won't read all of them in total, but because they're in your agenda, but there were some certainly that thought it was not a useful exercise, that it didn't accomplish much. Others thought, recognized that it was difficult and didn't feel like we resolved much. Others thought that, hey, this was a first step, not intended to solve all the work management problems. Some thought that the process should be improved. The exercise was important and informative from a staff perspective, and we should look at a two-step process, one of them being forming a small team to improve the process used to date, and step two then developing a process to manage the workload. Some wanted to continue the prioritization effort, but linking it to overall staff and community workload, and we're going to talk about the staff workload in just a moment. The question of available resources should be looked at in context. Last of all, the last one listed there was some belief that work should be prioritized, but the methodology chosen is not the most appropriate or efficient. So let's talk. That was just kind of to bring everybody back to July 15th when those thoughts were shared. And as you can see, there is quite a range of thoughts in that regard, and that's fine. What I'd like to do next, before we talk about some next steps, is have Liz share the staff utilization analysis that they did, which gives us good information, and I'm sure all of you have already read it, but gives us good information in terms of the commitments that staff have and how busy they've been. Liz, would you please do that?
Sure. Thanks, Chuck. And as Marika has up in Adobe Connect, I'll be just speaking from the memo that David Olive sent to you on the 28th of September of this year. And again, the purpose of this report is to give you a sense of the staff utilization, you know, which is intended to be, you know, viewed constructively as one input into the prioritization process, in addition to community constraints and, you know, many other factors, urgency of the issues being presented. And so what we did was basically, as a first step in quantifying the staff portion of the overall resource equation, was to develop a process to collect time expenditures and percent utilization data for those policy staff members who support the GNSO. So we took a snapshot of time the week of August 16th and surveyed the staff that support the GNSO and then aggregated that data based on this snapshot period and learned a couple things from that data, which we provide in this report. The first being that based on a, you know, sort of standard 40-hour work week, that staff is working, you know, the equivalent of 362 hours a week for the 6.9 full staff equivalent, which equates to about 131% utilization rate. You might want to glance briefly at the, and you can look at this yourselves in the memo at the appendices, the last two pages, which provide graphs that just show the FTE equivalent, the percent utilization. Again, we did this as a snapshot in time for a week in August, and so we also were able to calculate the time we spent on a per-project basis. And so, you know, you'll see from chart two in the appendix a representation of that where, you know, VI, for example, the Vertical Integration Working Group, was a major consumer of staff resource and time during that week. If you look at the last page, chart three, you'll also see information about all what were deemed all other projects. These are projects that happened not to have been prioritized as part of your prioritization process before. So I do want to say that I think that some of the items that are in this non-prioritized other GNSO projects category actually do relate to policy matters that were kind of initiated by the GNSO and which you might, at a different snapshot week in time, have as prioritized projects. So I wouldn't put too much significance into what's not in the other category versus the prioritized projects category because I see that as something that would ebb and flow week to week, as well as, for example, if you were to have taken the same snapshot, say, in September and not in August, you would have seen, for example, much more staff resource consumed by the Recommendation 6 working group, less, for example, on the RAA working group. So there's some details that might change depending on the week that you happen to review. But I think the upshot is that we're hoping that the data might be useful in understanding how much available GNSO staff capacity is being consumed for different projects, what the overall staff utilization is, and, you know, we look forward to answering any questions you have and also talking about the extent to which this is useful information or might need to be captured on a more regular basis for it to be useful to you as part of your discussions on prioritization more broadly. And why don't I stop there? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz. Any questions for Liz? Not seeing any hands. We will go ahead then, and let's look then. We took a poll in the meeting on the 15th, I believe, just in terms of five options. One of them was very broad, the other category. But as you can see, of the people who participated, There were five who thought we shouldn't spend any more time in prioritization. There were two who thought that we should develop a plan for using the results to manage the workload in the near term. No one thought that we should form a drafting team with the task of developing a new process. The fourth option was to form a drafting team with the task of improving the process. One person supported that. And seven people, the highest number, selected the other category, including combinations of options two, three, or four. So, you know, that doesn't resolve anything, but it shows, again, that we do have different ideas there. We have some time allotted to prioritization in Cartagena at 9 o'clock, as it's scheduled right now on Saturday, and we may spend a little more time on this depending on the agenda on the 18th of November. But we need to start getting a feel for, okay, where do we go next on this? Obviously, we have people on very different sides of the issue. So there's not a natural next step that would satisfy most people, I don't believe. Does anybody have any suggestions as to how we might proceed over the next couple months on this issue? And while you're thinking about that, has anyone, you know, if you didn't participate in this poll and would like to express your opinion now, that would be welcome as well. Mike.
Hey, Chuck. I'm just thinking that the VI issue is basically, there's nothing happening on that right now. And probably it doesn't seem like there will be anything, at least not like there was in August when this was taken. So I'm just wondering, you know, since that was such a big chunk, and if you take that and spread it across the other groups that are ongoing, it just seems like I don't know that we have such a big problem. But I don't know. I'd like to hear from Liz about that as well, what she's thinking as to the current state rather than back in August.
Liz, would you like to respond to that?
Well, for example, in September, I think the reality of what happened is that the vertical integration work continued and the morality and public order work occurred, and so I believe the spike would be huge for September if I were to do that, you know, have done the study for September. Now we're going into Cartagena, the month before Cartagena. Typically, you know, historically in years past, there would be a lull, like August should be a slow month. People are on vacation around the world. Working groups are just, you know, maybe in hiatus for summer holidays in some parts of the world. Yet we had this very high utilization in August. I feel certain September's would have increased. I am concerned that October's is probably higher in preparation now for Cartagena and with board reports and such. So I'm not so sure that there isn't something replacing it. But again, that goes to how often one would do the study and how that might affect those results. Those are just my reactions off the cuff.
Thanks, Liz. Tim. Tim? Are you on mute?
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. Let me start over.
Okay.
Embarrassing. Liz, I was just curious about the about new GTLDs. yeah, I suppose it's possible that today the board could, resolve a lot of issues and things could start moving forward, or one way or another, I would suspect things to start moving forward with that over the next quarter or two. Do you see that having an impact on staff utilization as well as that heats up and that rollout gets closer?
Good questions. Liz?
Well, I think certainly for other staff that'll be true. For the policy staff, you know, I think my crystal ball is about as good as yours. So I really hesitate to to project what I am very mindful of. And I'd like also if any of the other staff, Marika or Margie or Rob or Julie, have comments on this, to urge them to jump in with their thoughts too, is that, for example, we have so many other groups that are really struggling. And also maybe those of you who are chairing working groups like Alan, and, you know, the we've had such difficulty. Today's PDP work team call was light on attendance. So, you know, I'm really, we have so much work that where we're not making progress because there's not enough attendance and participation on calls. So I'd like to, you know, raise that as a concern as well. Maybe those resources could get, and same with community resources. People are, you know, this, our same community was pulled into those other issues. Maybe it'll help to focus attention elsewhere if the new GTLD, our work related to new GTLDs has subsided some. And I welcome the thoughts of others, please.
Thank you. And anybody else, including staff, that would like to comment, please raise your hand in Adobe. The another thing to keep in mind, and I have no idea whether this is going to happen or not, but it's possible that the board could come back with a task or tasks for the GNSO with regard to new GTLDs. I'd like to think it won't be something so broad as the VI, the total VI thing, but there may be some tasks that they would like input from the GNSO on as we move into the final guidebook, whenever that's going to happen. So we don't know there. Also, I'd like to point out that the RAP working group, the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, made a whole list of recommendations for GNSO work, and there's a drafting team working right now to develop a proposed approach on those. And the assumption is we couldn't do all of those things at once because there just isn't resources, and so how do we prioritize those? At some point, it seems to me we need some sort of guidance in terms of, okay, you know, here's some decisions we have to make. Can we initiate any of the PDPs that are recommended by the RAP working group report? Is there enough resources to do that? If we don't prioritize, how do we make those sorts of decisions? Those are the kind of questions that we will need to answer. Adrian.
Thanks. Thanks, Chuck. I just heard you say then, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
I just heard you say that you're anticipating that there will be work tasks, I think you said, put back on the council. Why do you say that?
Well, first of all, I didn't say I anticipate that. What I said is I don't know what the board will do, but it's possible they could come back with some tasks for the GNSO as this thing is wrapped up. Obviously, we developed the policy, and so it wouldn't be unusual for them to ask us to do some tasks, but I have no insight in that, Adrian. That's why I tried to qualify it the way I did.
I thought you might have had. Sorry, might have misheard you, but I thought maybe there'd been some backroom discussions or something, and you were anticipating getting some tasks. But if you're just saying it may be as a matter of fact, then that's fine.
Yeah, I wish I did, but I don't have any inside information as to what the board will do.
That's over, right?
What's that?
They've already met today, right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't even check to see what time they were meeting. Tim, you're probably right.
Yeah, excuse me, it's Liz. They met late in the night, depending on where you are in the world, last night.
Okay. So I haven't seen anything in terms of what came out of that, but hopefully we'll see in the next few days. But again, I'm sorry if I confuse things by suggesting that. I was just trying to point out that we seem to regularly be getting new tasks, whether it's generated within the GNSO or without, and so I was just pointing that out. And I think the most important thing for us to recognize is that when we are given tasks where we have a decision to make as to whether we have the resources or not, how do we determine whether we have the resources or not? That, of course, was one of the underlying reasons for doing the prioritization task. And if we don't prioritize, then how do we examine whether we can do something? Do we do it the way we did it in the past, just on a case-by-case basis and without any prioritization? What's your thinking on that?
Chuck, it's Adrian.
Go ahead.
You're not going to like this, Chuck, but can you tell me your thoughts on this? Often we, as chair, you have to stay, you position yourself independently. I'd love to hear your thoughts because I know that you put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, well, I don't want us to make it. I will, Adrian. Thanks for asking. And I don't want the fact that some of us put a lot of work into us color what decision we make on this. Now, to share my personal thoughts, to me, if we in the next couple months have to make a decision on whether to initiate a PDP, like from the registration abuse work or some other issue, then I would find the results of that prioritization exercise, if for no other reason, that it helps me clearly see everything on the table and the perceived values that people put on it. So, now, is that a real direct, definitive result from the prioritization exercise? No. You know, everything kind of blended towards the middle. But there is some differentiation, so that if we ever came to a point where we had to make some choices, it's data we could use. I don't think you can use it by just saying, hey, this is last on the list, so we'll eliminate that and do something else, because some of them, there were a lot of other factors involved. There may be, you know, very little time being spent on it, even though it's still on there, so maybe it's okay to continue. Or maybe there's another SO or AC involved that it's really important to. So I think I personally could see myself, if I'm given a decision as to whether initiate some work, using the data we got out of that to help make the decision. It would not be definitive by any means. And I think maybe some of us, myself maybe included, were naively expecting that it might provide more clarity than it does. But it is data. It shows the overall workload. It shows some indication of perceived value across the council. And so forth. So I find value in that regard. Now, is it worth all the effort we went to? I don't know. So I guess maybe it could be improved and simplified a little bit if that's all we're using it for. And so I guess I was in the other camp that I thought some combination of those three of the options would be a good way to go. Now, we're just about out of time on this. Does anybody else have a comment? Jamie.
Oh, I was on mute. Excuse me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think it seems to me that the exercise of 1 hour that it took to us, or it can take another exercise, to actualize the perceived value across the council, it seems to me that this is an outcome good enough for us to spend or to invest 1 hour of our common meeting in our meeting to make more present, more up to date, to update our common perceived value of the project. So I think this is value enough, and I don't see that 1 hour of our common time would be too much a cost in order to have this, I wouldn't say consensus, but an indication of value that is valuable for for you to make decisions, and all, and also for staff, as Liz just appointed.
Thank you.
So I would recommend for us to invest 1 hour in a meeting of Cartagena to make an update on the using the same way we did in Brussels.
And so update the prioritization exercise in the hour that we have on that Saturday morning. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Okay.
Precisely.
Okay, thank you. Olga?
Yeah, I just wanted to support what Jamie was saying. I think there is value in what we did, and maybe we can try to spend a little bit more time in it.
Now, in the Adobe room, you have a chance to click disagree or agree. Could I ask people to do that very quickly and then take it off in about 60 seconds? Just to see where people are. And while we're doing that, Stefan, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. I want to ask Jamie and Olga exactly what it is that they're suggesting, that we spend an hour doing what exactly, because I'm not too clear on what we would be doing in Cartagena for an hour that would add to what we've done already. So it's just a clarifying question. And I would remind, basically everyone that we've been at this for a year now. So I really do think that if we start to renew the process, and I agree that not everything that we've done should be thrown out the window. I just think that we need to hurry and find something that can be used pretty quickly. And I'm not sure what it is that they're both suggesting that would help us do that. So if they can perhaps help me with that, that would be appreciated.
And I'll let Jamie respond to that in just a moment, but we've got two other people in queue, and we're over time, so we're going to have to keep it within a minute, please, each person that's talking, and let's go to Tim.
I was just going to suggest, and not that this will help necessarily with prioritizing the issues that are in the queue, but it seems like right now, just given the failing participation or the lack of participation, the utilization staff, according to the report from David, et cetera, that we should maybe consider, the resources that are saturated right now, and whatever we do, that we don't start anything new until we start closing out some of the things that are ongoing right now. I think that would be a practical course to take, especially given that we could get handed something we have to address from the board in regards to new GPLDs or something like that. So I just would strongly encourage us to kind of hold off from starting anything new until some of these other things start to close out.
Thanks, Tim. Alan.
Yeah, I guess I don't agree with the concept that it only takes an hour. A lot of us spent a lot more hours in that getting input from our constituencies and other groups and trying to understand these things. So it was a much larger number than the hour we spent in that room. That's number one. Number two, if you look at the people who actually participate, there aren't all that many people. There's a small core who participate in multiple task forces, multiple working groups, multiple whatevers. I think the critical thing in deciding whether to launch a new process or not is going to be, do we have a community that is interested in participating in it, and we'll do that. And I think that should be one of the decision points that we look at in prioritizing something and deciding to launch a new effort, is there a core of people who's actually going to work on it? Because that hasn't proven to be true in all cases.
Good points, Alan. And I'm going to close it off with Phil.
Thanks. I guess I would just say, first of all, that I can appreciate that perhaps the people who did the work on this might feel a little bit frustrated, and I hope that they don't feel too much like that. I think everybody appreciates the work that was done. And it was very useful to have a kind of a macro overview of things. It gave us a baseline. But it does not appear that there's broad support for continuing like this. The effort was not wasted, though. I mean, we have this as something we can look at, and we can always return to it again later on. Or we could even consider, perhaps in the future, some lighter way of doing something like this, like online, having people indicate preferences and priorities periodically or something. But I think that under the circumstance, that, you know, it sounds like the die is cast from my standpoint.
Thank you, Bill. And let's wrap this one up. Stefan, you think I should continue it longer?
No. I'm going to stand in the way of progress.
Okay. I said I was coming back to Jamie, but I think Bill's right that there doesn't seem to be strong support from going through another prioritization exercise, which is, I think, what Jamie was suggesting in Cartagena. So it would basically update it based on change status of the various projects and maybe even some new projects on the list. So what I would like to I want to throw out a challenge. I'll put this on the agenda next time. We won't spend much time on it unless some people respond to my challenge. But my challenge is this. Okay, several of you in your comments raised some what I believe are very good points of things that we can use in making decisions about when we're confronted with whether to add a project or not. If everyone, for that matter, if you're willing, could, you know, communicate on the list, you know, factors that we can use, even if it's like Tim's suggestion, hey, we know everybody's overloaded right now. Let's not add anything until some close off. That can be a factor that we can use to make decisions. So if we could get before our next meeting, kind of compile a list. If somebody wants to do one all their own, or just we can compile it if everybody submits their ideas, including those that were communicated verbally, it would give us something to work off of. And maybe at least begin to, over time, develop some criteria we can use when we do have to make decisions. And I'm going to move on because we're quite a bit over now and go to item 3 on the agenda, election of council chair and vice chairs. And this is very time critical because we need to get this started. The procedures were sent out, I think, Monday. Not a lot of lead time, certainly not the kind of lead time that our procedures require. Sorry for that. The procedures basically call for the two houses to come up with the nominations in the next couple of weeks, and then in the next, I think, about 2 weeks after that, and I don't have the exact times in front of me, there would be an election online for the nominees, and that would end before the weekend in Cartagena, thereby allowing some time for the houses, if there's a successful election, allowing the houses then to elect a vice chair. Now, it's perfectly understood that there may not be an election on a first vote, in which case the process likely would extend beyond the Cartagena meeting, and so vice chairs would have to be elected without knowing who the chair is. Now, there's been very good discussion on the list about this. From what I've seen, there's pretty much unanimous agreement that the procedures need quite a bit of work. There are lots of issues. So one of the things I would like to get out, besides approving some procedures for this time around, I would like to see if there's support for possibly sending this issue back to the OSC and probably ultimately the GCOT to work on this a little bit further and address the concerns that I'm sure are going to be communicated now. Stefan, you're up first. Was your hand still up from before, or did you want to talk now?
Sorry, I'm trying to get off mute and trying to get my hand down. Obviously too much for my brain.
Okay. All right. Okay. A bunch of hands went down. Okay. Olga?
Yes. I just would like to to confirm that non-com appointees will remain in the houses that we are now, because we know the name of the three non-com appointees so far, and just wanted to confirm that so both houses would know who their non-com appointees are.
Very good question, Olga. I appreciate you raising that. I don't think that's a given. I think it's up to each house to make a decision on that, and that decision needs to be made very quickly. Again, I believe that the procedure should be updated to deal with that issue as well, not just, you know, the timing of election for chairs and vice chairs and so forth, but also the assignment of the NCAs to the houses. So, excellent point, Olga. I appreciate you bringing that up. Well, let me ask this question then, not seeing any hands up. Are there any objections to the procedures the way they're outlined in this process or suggested changes? We don't have to, you know, accept them the way they are. We do need to accept something today. Are there any suggested changes to the procedures that were put out for consideration for this cycle? Olga.
Well, I think that if the non-com appointees issues should go first, then it should be included in the procedures.
I'm not specifically. What are you suggesting?
If non-com appointees should be appointed first for each of the houses and decided that before, then that should be mentioned. The only mention about non-com appointees is saying that if the non-voting non-com appointee is elected, then will be a non-voting chair. That's the only mention about non-com appointees.
Right. These procedures do not deal with the assignment of the NCAs. You are correct. And I think that that's an issue, and we'll come to that after we deal with the current procedures, is an issue that personally I believe we should send back to the OSC to include that in a proposed revision of the election procedures to deal with that. Now, for the election of chair and vice chairs that are covered in the procedures that are on the table right now, again, you're absolutely right. That doesn't deal with that. If that election occurs before the end of the Cartagena meeting, it won't matter because we have assignments for the NCAs right now. If if it extends beyond the Cartagena meeting, then however the NCAs are assigned, those new NCAs would be involved in that process. So I think we can deal with the current procedures without having that resolved. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Stefan.
Yeah, Chuck, thanks. I was going to actually ask why that it was important to decide that, the point that Olga was making before the elections. Well, I think you answered that point. So I'm able to make another one, which I've heard, which is specifically the role, the timing of the outgoing councillors. And are they able to vote, or do we expect the incoming councillors, for those obviously who are seeing their terms expire and having new colleagues coming in to take their positions, are we expecting them to vote in their stead? Now, obviously, if everything is done before Cartagena, then we don't have to consider that issue. But as you pointed out earlier on, we may run into a situation where things will have to be done during or after Cartagena. And in that case, I think we may have to have a look at that situation. The underlying point in that question being that new councillors may feel they don't really know the people that they're being asked to vote for well enough to cast a vote.
Right. And by the way, let me answer the question as you phrased it at first, and you really answered it yourself. And that is, it depends. Depends when the election occurs. Existing councillors will vote up until the end of the Cartagena meeting. After that, it will be the new council that votes. And that's one of the realities of the process the way it's outlined right now. Is that the way it should be? I'm not going to weigh in on that. I think quite a few people, both on the council and elsewhere, have good opinions about that, and that's another reason I think why it would be good if we revisited these procedures, so that next year we try and not run into the issues that we're running into right now. Adrian.
Excuse me. Thank you. Stefan really covered the exact area I was going over. But just in response to what you just said then, Chuck, I absolutely think we need to steer the process in order to deliver appropriate outcomes and not have to deal with the outcomes of the process. So what I mean by that is if we don't, I think we need to decide very quickly whether we want new councillors voting on the council and what impact that has. And then ensure that process either does or does not happen, depending on what the outcome of that is. So I'd like to see us steering towards getting some answers to those questions very quickly, such that we can decide on our voting procedures early on, and also understand for those that may want to run for these positions who they need to talk to in order to put their case across for why they should be elected and so on and so forth.
Well. You know, I'm sympathetic with what you're saying, Adrian, but the reality of the matter is we have some voting procedures that are in place right now that we need to follow. Unfortunately, they're very vague, and they, you know, allow the problems that we've been talking about. So I'm not sure we can answer those questions in a short period of time. Bottom line is if we don't start the process for nominations for a chair from each house, and the election process now, then we're guaranteeing that we won't have a chair in Cartagena at the end of the meeting in Cartagena, and then now maybe that's okay. I just want everybody to be aware of that. As you know, I myself can't serve beyond Cartagena because of term limits. Okay, now if we would at least have to elect vice chairs by Cartagena. To keep the leadership going. You with me on that?
Yeah, so I understand that point, Chuck, that's exactly what I'm saying, and maybe I'm not being so clear, but I think that if there is a way that we can minimise the impact of uncertainty, so understand what we want to get out of the process. If what we want to get out of the process is having our councillors, our existing councillors vote, then let's get started. If we don't, then we can afford to hold off and take our time and have it run over into Cartagena. That's what I mean by understanding what
okay.
the outcomes are.
Okay.
You've done a good.
No, that's okay. I think I got your point. Did you want to say something else?
I was just going to compliment you, Chuck, but I'll save that for another time.
Thanks. Okay. Yeah, we could use the time. So in other words, if we're satisfied, and I hope I'm not extrapolating too much, Adrian, tell me if I am, but if I'm extrapolating correctly, then we could decide, okay, we would prefer that the new council elect their chair, and so we could decide to just vote on vice chairs, and we would have to do that without knowing who the chair is. That has its own problems, maybe not insurmountable. And then not even worrying about electing a chair right away. Because the procedures, the existing procedures say that if we don't have a chair by the end of the annual meeting, then the two vice chairs take over the leadership until there is a chair. Is that kind of what you're thinking, Adrian? Would you advocate an approach like that? Or do you think it would be better to go ahead under the existing procedures and try and elect a chair now. If we're successful, good. If we're not, then we elect the vice chairs.
Exactly. I think that the latter of what you just said is certainly my preference, and I think, and Tim and Stefan step up if I'm out of line, I think that is the preferred process for the registrar stakeholder group.
Thank you. And I think, unless I'm reading it wrong, that's kind of what the existing procedures do. The ones that are on the table for us to consider today.
Yeah, and so therefore, I'm just, I guess, throwing my weight behind, well, let's get started. So, anyway, enough.
No, thanks. That's good. Very, very helpful contribution. Thank you. Stefan.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that the way we did it last time in Korea?
Yes.
So I think we all agree that, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but my understanding is that we all agree that that's a good way of doing it.
Okay, so let's find out. Is there anybody opposed then, or have any modifications to the procedures as they're outlined in the document right now for this time only? We're going to come back to the reviewing the procedures for the future, okay? Is there anybody that's opposed to these procedures? Can we assume, can we go ahead and start with these? Now, I do want to share one thing that came out in the registrar stakeholder group meeting yesterday, and unless Caroline or Edmund want to share it, Caroline, do you want to share that about the timing of the that? Could you share that?
So I believe our discussion yesterday, we talked about the timing of the. So if we were going with existing procedures, we talked about the timing of the vice chair election, and there seemed to be some concerns that this would take place over the weekend of the meeting when there would not be, you know, as many attendees as possible in place. So if possible, we would try and keep the election for the vice chair or shorten the duration of the election and have it the week before the meeting.
Yeah, let me see if I think I perceived it a little bit differently. Who knows which one of us is right? But that the idea was to start, not wait until the weekend to elect vice chairs, to end the election for chair, the first round election, earlier, so that we know the results of that, you know, several days, maybe a week or 6 days before the weekend, to have consideration of who the vice chairs might be. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think we're sort of saying the same thing, but yeah.
Okay.
The group understands that correctly.
Okay. Christina?
I was actually trying to figure out where to raise the same point that Carolyn made, namely that at least from the IPC, it may just be David and I in Cartagena for that weekend, simply because given the limited ability of non-counselors to participate, a lot of folks are just not coming. So I do think that we need to make sure that we are not doing anything substantive, whether it's elections or not, that first weekend of the meeting.
This is a little bit of a side question, but I'm curious as to why you're saying the inability of non-counselors to participate.
There's just a very strong feeling among IPC members who attended Brussels that they really didn't have an opportunity to meaningfully participate in the weekend working sessions. I think that's kind of a combination of the kind of only counselors at the table and, you know, seats permitting, and counselors ask questions first and then others. So I think it's just a combination of those. It's something that I am hoping that we can talk about at some point farther on in the agenda or perhaps at our next meeting.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for clarifying, because I would hope the same thing, because I think the open participation of more than just counselors has been critical over the last few years and a very good trend. So that's why I asked the question I did, because I'm concerned if we're going too far the other way, I would like to talk about that too. So thanks. Stefan?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Christina's point raises a question in my mind. So if we go back to Korea, where just to remind everyone, we had an election where everything happened during the meeting. There was a lot of background conversation to determine who would be vice chair, for example, within each house. I mean, each house went away and decided that amongst themselves. And there was the chair election that happened during the open meeting, and then the houses announced their vice chairs. I'm just trying to get a feel for, do people think that they did not have adequate time or weren't able to communicate with their groups in the way that was done. And would they, I mean, do we need to, for example, really separate the two elections by several weeks, for example, to give people time to react to the chair election? I mean, if I recall, the MC House confirmed their chair a few weeks after Korea. So, you know, that may imply that more time was needed. I'm just trying to get a feel for what the problems that arose for some people were.
Okay, thank you. Now, let me come back to the issue that was raised in the registry stakeholder group. Not that maybe other people feel differently about it, but the idea was is to shorten the voting period, maybe by a week or 6 days or something, so that the voting period on chair first time around ends like the beginning of the week, say on Monday for the first chair election, so that we have 5 days before the weekend that we know how that election came out and consider vice chairs after that information. Is that a change that anybody would object to? Does that leave enough time for voting? Glenn or one of the staff people, if you can help me out, I should have had that document in front of me, but I think it called for how much time was given for voting online?
About 2 weeks, Chuck.
About 2 weeks, so we can either knock a week off or 6 days or something.
That's right.
Is a week enough time for voting for the chair online?
If everybody promises that they look at their ballots and they don't lose them, yes, it is.
Okay, what about counselors? Is a week enough time? Does anybody think it's not enough time? So if we modified the process to allow 7 days, 7 calendar days for the online voting to occur, making sure that doesn't end, Glenn, I don't remember the exact dates, on a weekend. It should end on a regular workday.
Yes.
But does anybody object to those procedures with that modification? Okay, not hearing anybody. Let's go with those. And then and to speed things up, I'm gonna push this a little bit, but check me if I'm pushing too much. Is there anybody that disagrees that we should send this back to the OSC and ultimately the GCOT to do some more work, and that we should provide some input to them, like, for example, on issues like should the new council elect their chair? What's the term of the chair? Should we change the term of the chair so that it extends into the next year and allows time for an election, or should the process be started earlier, and so forth? There's quite a few issues. We don't need to talk about all those now, but I see some hands up, so let some people talk. Bill.
Just express a really naive sort of view about things, which is consistent with my general orientation. I just think that I can't help wondering if doing the elections online when the larger genus of community is not present isn't kind of weird. As awkward as it was to do everything in the meeting, and there obviously were some complications, I still kind of thought that in a way, for people who are in the audience to watch us select our leadership and welcome you as Chair Chuck and so on, was kind of nice in a sort of community way. And I just can't help wondering if we lose something by doing it all online. I recognize the efficiency arguments, but I'm just expressing out loud something in the back of my head. Thanks.
No, and I'm glad you shared it. One of the problems we have is that we would definitely then, if we wait until the Wednesday meeting in Cartagena to do the first vote on a chair, is that we have we're going to have to elect, the houses will have to elect their vice chair before knowing who the chair is. And that's maybe not insurmountable, but it is a factor. But I'm comfortable going with what direction the council thinks best. Wendy.
Yes, I had a question about the continuing use of committees whose work I thought was concluded. I thought that we had wrapped up the work of the GCOT and that we should, if we had further questions, should reconstitute. I thought we had even discussed a standing committee to address issues that remained unresolved.
We had discussed it, but we hadn't made a decision on that yet. That's on the agenda today.
So my recommendation would be for a standing committee rather than jing up concluded committees.
Okay, we'll get to that later. Okay, Adrian.
Thanks, Chuck. I just wanted to respond to the. I don't want to belittle or dilute the sentiment, but to I think it was Bill's comment. There are three people in the audience. That's hardly community, as far as I'm concerned. We haven't done very well about getting a whole lot of folks there. I would much rather put my support around getting the process done and dusted and moving on with dealing with things rather than appeasing the thoughts of the of you know the community being able to cheer and provide a platform for our chair to do a nice little speech. I just want to see things moving and not fulfill those sort of requirements. Thanks.
Thanks, Adrian. So we have a couple diverse opinions then. One of them, and Bill, I'm concluding that you would not support the procedures as they stand right now with the online vote the first time. Is that correct?
On this, I'm ready to roll with what everybody feels if there's a strong sentiment. I'm not sure I recall things the way Adrian does in terms of the crowd that was there when we actually did the election, but that's beside the point. My sentiment was more general, I think.
Yeah, okay. Well, is there anyone that objects to the procedures with the one change of shortening the online voting to 1 week? And by the way, Bill, I was on kind of the brunt of the whole election process in front of everybody, but I thought it was good. I'll agree with you that I thought it was it was good to be publicly available. The thing I'm struggling with is this idea. I know that in the contracted party's house, we're having trouble. Okay, sometimes if someone doesn't get chair, they might be the vice chair, and you don't, if you're not knowing that, now you can always change it, of course. So I think all of these things are manageable, but the main point I want to make, and this is a personal point, not a chair point, is I think the procedures definitely need some work. Whoever we have do that, we're running, into some very awkward situations, and I don't think it's that hard to fix, but we're going to need to spend some time on it. So, not hearing any objections, we'll go ahead and kick off the procedures. So, Glenn, if you could send a message, if you want it to come from me, I can do that to the houses. And please, those of you in each of the houses, let your respective leaders know that we have a couple weeks to get the nominee from each house, and then an online election will occur for chair. Now, keep in mind, it's quite possible that we won't have an election then the first time around, and the procedures that we have now allow for that. Now, last of all, and we'll decide later whether we use a new standing committee or the existing steering committees to revisit this, so let's not worry about that issue right now, but does anybody disagree with the need to take another look at the voting procedures? Anybody disagree with that? Please raise your hand or put disagree in the Adobe room. Okay, so we'll assume that we're going to revisit that, and we'll either do it through a new standing committee or through the steering committees, depending on what we decide later. Moving on. And
Chuck, sorry, this is Glenn.
Yes.
If you're going to cut the voting time by 1 week, it will finish on Thanksgiving on the 25th of November. Is that all right?
Do it on the next Monday. hopefully.
Well, the next Monday will be the 29th of November. Is that all right?
Yeah, I think it needs to be, because we don't want the election to end on a major national holiday in the U.S. or any other country for that matter.
Okay, so it will still start on the 19th of November and go through to the 29th.
Yeah, that'll give us 10 days for that. I think that's better than ending it on a major holiday in one country of the world, and I would say the same thing in any other country, or on a weekend. So, okay.
Thank you. So I will then adjust the dates in that and send it out tomorrow.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks, Glenn. Okay, going on. We're only 20 minutes behind. Item 4. Who is studies? I'll turn it right over to Liz to give us a report on the status of all 4 studies.
Thank you, Chuck. And we do have slides for you. I won't review the goals of the Who is studies. That's just an introductory slide that gives some history on overall why we were doing the work on studies that we're doing. I want to start today with a quick just overview of the 4 study areas that we are looking at so everyone has a sense of where we are, and I'm going to focus particularly on the analysis that staff did of the privacy and proxy abuse study. So just really quickly on the Who is misuse study, the misuse study, and I know it's kind of confusing about our language here. You might think that misuse and abuse are synonymous, and I'm sure they largely are, but we are distinguishing those terms simply for the purpose of distinguishing these 2 studies. So Who is misuse is the study that you approved on the 8th of September, which will assess whether public Who is significantly increases harmful acts and impact and the impact of anti-harvesting measures on that. And we did identify a researcher who we're working with to finalize a contract. I expect it would be final probably by the end of the year, and the study kicked off at that point. There are some details about making sure we're in agreement about the technical aspects and just some contractual matters to work through, so it's not a particularly speedy process, but we are engaging with them at a level of significant level of detail since the council approved that study. The Who is Registrant Identification Study is a study where we've completed the analysis, but the council has not yet decided whether to proceed with this study or not. This study would determine how registrants identify themselves and who is, and to what extent domains registered by businesses are used for commercial purposes. The next study is this abuse study that would compare a broad sample of privacy and proxy registered domains associated with alleged harmful acts to assess how often bad actors try to obscure identity and who is, and how this rate of abuse compares to overall proxy and privacy abuse. And we'll also look at how it compares to alternatives like falsify who is data, compromised machines, free web hosting, other ways that bad actors are alleged to hide. And this is particularly important to try to gauge the significance of the misuse. The study needs, in order for the study to really inform policy, it must determine not just the frequency of proxy and privacy registrations, but that rate's significant. So looking at some of the, comparing this to other ways bad actors hide, we think would be a promising way to accomplish that. In terms of our analysis, we did get 3 RFP responses. 2 were competitive, 1 was better than the others. The estimated cost is probably about $150,000, less than a year in time frame to complete. We originally proposed 2 sampling methodologies in the terms of reference that we posted to the for the RFP. One was live feed monitoring for incidents that are typically reported in real time. like spam and phishing and those kinds of things, and then offline third-party reporting for things like cyber squatting and trademark infringement. But in terms of the feedback that we got from the researchers, they definitely viewed the live feed sampling as the preferred means of sampling. They also found that some activities that were suggested to be studied were difficult to study or for other reasons irrelevant. They had a concern, and we do too, a bit about false positives. And the false positives could kind of go either way, I guess. It's the concern that because the study would analyze who is data associated with all alleged bad actors, whether proven or otherwise, you know, there would be likely to be abuse, some at least abuse reported in cases that turn out not to be abuse. And so the pool of domains, you know, all will be measured. But despite the possibility for false positives, we do think that the results will be useful to supply some empirical data on how often alleged bad actors obscure their identity using methods, including but not limited to the privacy and proxy abuse, which we think will be particularly useful. And if the privacy and proxy rate is high among bad actors as compared to a control sample or these alternative methods that bad actors may use, then you might conclude from that that some policy changes might be warranted or other best practices, changes in best practices or such. So that's our analysis, which is provided in more detail in the report that you see linked there. So there's more detail available. And I'm happy, by the way, to answer questions on this call or if it's easier, because some of these may be a little more detailed questions. Also happy to answer them offline or in writing. And then just moving quickly on to the last study. Oops, I should have advanced that slide there. While I was speaking, sorry about that. But just to move on to the privacy and proxy relay and reveal study, that study is underway. We have a RFP pending. The responses are due by the 30th of November from interested bidders. We won't obviously have that analysis in advance of Cartagena, but we'd certainly work on completing that as soon as possible thereafter and target having that report by the end of the year or right after the first of the year to the council. I feel like I should go back and just put that staff analysis slide up one more time on the privacy and proxy abuse study, since I didn't have it up while I was speaking, and I apologize for that. And then at the end, I do have a chart that tries to kind of memorialize the status of all of these studies at a glance. So let me conclude there, Chuck, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Liz. Are there any questions of Liz about any of these? Notice that she, as planned, spent a little more time on study three because of the fact that we hadn't spent time going over the analysis of that. We intended to last time and had to defer that. So any questions, please raise your hand. Okay. Our next, obviously, the fourth study is not ready for any decision by the council yet, and we're not forced to make decisions on studies two or three either, and nor am I saying that we should. But if there is anyone who thinks that one of these studies should be pursued, I ask you to please prepare a motion and submit it, 8 days before our next meeting, or it can be in the Cartagena meeting, or maybe you want to wait until we see what we have on study four, and that's okay too. But I'm not going to push one way or another on these studies unless someone on the council initiates a motion to pursue one of the other studies. So I will leave that up to the council. Is there any further discussion on who is studied? Okay. Christina.
Thanks, Chuck. Just a quick clarification, Liz. I, and half of this might be incorrect, so please correct me where I'm misstating things, but my recollection is that the council had asked for a reserve, for lack of a better word, of about $400,000 for these surveys. And at this point, the motion that we've passed with regard to Study 1 really draws down $150,000 from that $400,000. And that the question, or that it is an open question as to whether if we don't allocate the remaining $250,000, whether or not it can carry over into calendar year 2011. Is all of that correct, or any of it part of it?
Mostly, I think it is. Let me share a couple corrections, and somebody else can correct me if I'm wrong. First of all, we didn't request $400,000, what was put in the budget for Who Is Studies. So, but you got the main point right. There's at least $400,000 in the budget for Who Is Studies. The second point I would correct, and Liz, please correct me if I got this wrong, but I think based on feedback you've provided from finance and so forth, that we will not expend $150,000 on Study 1 in the current fiscal year. So there's how much of it we will expend once it gets started, you know, will we spend half or something? So it's probably safe to, and the answer that I have understood is that any there's not a provision for carrying funds forward. So there will need to be funds in the next fiscal year budget that would allow for completion of the studies. Now, the way I translate that, and I hope I'm not being too confusing, is that you know, we're not going to use all of the 150 on Study 1, so maybe there's still $300,000 left. We don't know for sure, but probably a little bit more than that. Does that make sense?
Yes, thanks.
Okay. Now, respecting your point, and probably a concern that's in various people's heads, is that, okay, you know, we may not, maybe that's a good reason to wait until we see the results of Study 4, to make sure, because there still is a limited budget. There may be a little bit more there because we're starting the studies late and they will carry over in the next fiscal year. But, you know, maybe it does make sense to wait until we have the whole picture. But I'll let counselors decide that. Okay? Anything else on Who Is Studies? Thanks for bringing that up. It's really important that we're clear on the budget issue.
But can I just add, because I don't know if we
yes.
fully covered this, that it's Liz, that, you know, the budget process doesn't really have a capability for multi-year budgeting. So it's also true that even though I think it's extremely unlikely that we could spend this money this year, the money won't automatically be carried over into next year because that mechanism doesn't really exist. So it's going to be important for the council and the community to you know, as we look at the year 12 budget to sort of make your expectations known with regard to that.
Understood.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Let's go to item 5 on voting procedures when counselors are absent and or must abstain, and I know nobody's interested in this one. By the way, it's been very good discussion on the list, and I really appreciate that because I'm with everybody, I think, on this, that is there anybody that doesn't think we need to revisit those procedures?
Hey, Chuck, this is Ray. Should I speak up?
Yeah, I'm gonna come to you in a minute. I'm gonna come to that in a
that
minute.
That was a joke.
Right?
That was a joke.
But yeah. So one of the things that we want to do, though, And thanks, Ray, and sorry that it, you know, we're starting at least 20-25 minutes after we thought, or 20 minutes after we thought you would be involved on this. But thanks for being patient with us. Is to understand. Obviously, there is some complexity with regard to these procedures. And what I wanted Ray to do, and hopefully all of you saw Philip's message. His didn't get into too much to do with the complexity. But I believe that the GCOT, you know, there was some rationale as to why they designed it the way they did. That doesn't mean it needs to stay that way, but I thought as a first step we should understand the thinking of the working team before we start looking at making changes. So, Ray, you're on.
Well, thank you, Chuck. Yeah, and I think that was what you just said was very well said. It does not need to stay the way it is now. So let's, you know, stress that. There was some methodology and thinking behind how the GCOT approached its work. Of course, considering you know, the new bicameral structure that was going into place, trying to respect the autonomy of each of the houses and stakeholder groups and constituencies, and trying to devise a rules of procedure that didn't necessarily dictate downward as much as allow remedies to exist for various what-if scenarios that have to do with absences or abstentions, where each group, if you will, could choose which remedies best serve their needs, dependent upon the what-if scenario involving a counselor being absent or needing to abstain in the case of a vote on being on the agenda. So I sent around an email. It was roughly before you all started your meeting today, so you probably haven't had a chance to review it. And it was just a sort of a background of how the GCOT approached its work or the methodology. And I won't spend a lot of time on it, but just for context, I hope everybody does understand that in the rules as contained, the ability to invoke an absentee voting mechanism is actually very simplistic for specific types of voting issues. So I'm assuming everybody understands that. So what we're talking about here are remedies or alternative procedures in the case of an absence or the need for a counselor to abstain when it is involving a voting issue that is not captured as one of the four that are under the very simplistic absentee voting mechanism. That's the breadth of why we went down the path. So rather than having no remedies or abilities for a counselor or an SG to have their voice by vote heard in the case of an absence or the need of an abstention by a counselor for an issue that is not listed as part of the absentee voting issues, we decided to investigate mechanisms and include them into the rules, and not just one size fits all, but offer a number of different ways that then the SGs or constituencies can look at and decide if they wanted to include into their charter or not. So that's kind of the high level. Now, where the rubber hits the road is the actual implementation of these, but before I go there, I should mention that, you know, it was a very strong principle by the GCOT members, and remains so, that the idea is that for counselors to be present, not to be absent. That absences, of course, in the real world and in practical sense will occur from time to time. But with that said, it really should be the exception. So the idea was not to try to come up with rules of convenience, if you will, for the case of a last minute, for example, absence that happens by a counselor to address a voting issue that is not already captured by absentee voting. So the intent of these was not for that specific purpose of a last minute, I can't make the meeting, and I need to pass my vote. That's not what these alternative remedies are for. There are, in fact, really no remedies in the rules of procedure now to capture that particular what-if scenario, a last minute, I can't make the meeting, and the issue at hand is not covered by the absentee voting. There is not one now. So I wanted to make that clear. I think maybe I might stop there and see if anybody has any questions.
And please raise your hand if you have a question. Now, Ray, I'm going to ask a couple questions. Number one, was there any input from the General Counsel's office on this whole idea of remedies for voting when somebody's not present or have to abstain?
Yes, sure. We ran a lot of things by, you know, legal staff legal along the way, but one in particular pertained to the proxy voting. And, you know, I think many are aware that that has been a sort of a lightning rod or discussion of debate over the years is how to incorporate proxy voting into the GNSO council voting measures. In fact, it's been such a lightning rod that the GCOT and myself as chair, I mean, nearly just chose not to even go down the path of seeing if we could. But we decided to take a quick look is what happened, and we took a quick look and discovered that there could potentially be a way to include proxy voting into the rules of procedure. And again, it would only occur in the case of an absence or the need for an abstention for an issue that was not one of the four issues covered under absentee voting. So what the staff legal advice to us was on that is that in order for there to be any kind of procedures in place for proxy voting, the vote being passed had to be representative of a group. It was not an option for us. We didn't say to ourselves, well, you know, proxy voting has to be for a group. This was the advice we got from legal, to even go down the path of having proxy voting included into the rules of procedure. So we were working under that constraint and chose, and I think correctly, to go ahead and offer it as a potential option for a stakeholder to choose if they wanted to or not, the mechanisms then that went with the proxy voting to ensure that when the counselor wanted to invoke a proxy, there would be an affirmation that the vote being passed was endorsed, however you want to put it, by the group as representative of that group.
Thanks, Ray. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot, Dan, but mm-hmm. you can ignore me, but at least tell me you're going to ignore me. Can you provide any insight? Because for those that haven't been on the council very long, this whole idea of proxy voting is an old issue, and General Counsel's office, you know, really limited what used to happen in terms of proxy voting from a legal point of view, and so that's where a lot of this is coming from. Dan, can you add any insight to the legal concerns with regard to proxy voting? And if you can't, that's okay.
Yeah, I can talk about it, so I'm not sure it'll be exactly what you're looking for, but we can go from there. But you're right, there was, for years, I guess, there was an informal sort of proxy voting thing that was going on with the GNSO Council, and it came up to the office of the General Counsel once, and I think our office pointed out that there wasn't actually anything in the bylaws at the time that was providing for proxy voting, and in fact there were provisions saying things like all counselors had to be able to hear each other and be able to speak in order to vote at a meeting, so the practice of proxy voting was sort of stopped at the council level. And this is going back years, and we worked with, I remember Philip and others on the council to come up with the absentee voting procedures, because there was concern that stakeholder groups or their constituencies then were being denied their representation if, like, let's say an important vote on whether or not to send up a policy position to the board, if the council member happened to be absent that day, the constituency would lose its vote on that important question. So we worked with the council then and put in the absentee voting provisions, and then I guess there's this new thing that's now it's not in the bylaws, but it's in the operating procedures, which is this new abstention procedures, and we did work. You know, the question came up with Ray, and I don't want to overcomplicate this call or get into it with Ray, but I just would take a little bit of reservation that I don't think it was quite as simple or cut and dry as Ray might be remembering it, or he's necessarily trying to summarize the whole conversation here. But we did work with Liz and the policy team, and also with council members on coming up with these procedures. And there were legal concerns, but just in general, you know, just taking precautions about how the rules would work out and to avoid gaming and to avoid problems. But so we did work with them on it. I don't recall any specific clear advice. Just quite the right way Ray put it just now.
Yeah, actually, that's very fair. I mean, that's you know, when I say the advice from legal, I am referring to that in a summarized sort of way. But I do recall that the vote being representative of a group was an integral point made to us with regards to proxy voting. Now, it could have been lost in the translation because, you know, Dan was never on, you know, the GCOT calls. I think there was one call where Samantha might have been on the call. but I don't think we were talking about proxy for that call. So, you know, there could have been some things lost in the translation, but that was how we, you know, how we understood it to be for, how proxy voting could be put into the rules of procedure in a way that staff legal would find acceptable, and we were shooting for that. We wanted to achieve achieve its acceptance, not run into roadblocks along the way. So if there's new information out there now from staff legal, if they can offer additional input, for example, or if we were running under an incorrect assumption of any in any way, well, that's what we're all here for.
Yeah, thanks to both of you. And a quick question, and I'm go. We have three people in queue that I want to get to right away. But I'm assuming, Dan, that if we went back and looked at these procedures again, that someone from the legal team would work with us to make sure that we're in sync with concerns from the legal side. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, Dan. Wendy, you're on.
Thanks. So my concern is, from the perspective of those trying to use these procedures, why do we have to be thinking about classifying the kinds of votes as one question? And second, it seems to be disconnected from the way constituencies work, and in particular the way the NCSG stakeholder group works, in that we don't direct our counselors to vote. So why is it not sufficient to have the more abstract will of the group? The group wills that it and chooses as its proxy the person whom its counselor selects as the proxy, and the group chooses as its votes those votes that the proxy chooses to make in the moment. I would think that that would satisfy any legal requirements we could be under, that the votes be the votes of the group, and would be simpler and more in line with the way at least our stakeholder group has been conducting its non-proxy business.
Well, I think my best answer to that one, Wendy, this is Ray, is if you can, you know, capsulize that into a paragraph or two, we would certainly be happy to take it up and revisit it and look at it, and of course do the work to go with talk to legal and see what feedback they give us. I guess I don't want to cross over into another threshold issue here. By the way, I mean, if it's decided later that another standing committee is to review the implementation of things, that's fine too.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
Yep, took me a minute to get off mute. I guess maybe I don't have a question if we're still going to revisit it. It's just that I guess I'm not sure whether we're talking about actual legal issues. In other words, there's some national or international law that comes into play here in regards to this. It doesn't sound like it is. It sounds like what we're talking about is from within, looking at it from within ICANN's bylaws, which is a little bit different. Not that that's easy to change, but that keeps it within community. But if we're talking about things that are beyond our control, such as existing national laws or international law that's going to control, that's something I think that should be clear. At least I would like to understand. But I think, so far from what I've heard, that's not the case, that we're talking just about within the existing rules and procedures and ICANN's bylaws. Is that correct, Dan?
Yes, it is. Thanks, Tim.
Okay.
Well said, Tim. Thank you. Wolf?
Yeah, thank you. Wolf speaking. I would like to just to point to the question of how to handle the process and the procedure. So it seems to be so the concerns of people is, you know, if they are referred to the chart, you know, which has been developed to outline the process, they may be in the first one they may be horrified because it seems to be complicated. And I was thinking, well, how we could facilitate this process and following the what was on the list today. So I came to the to the idea. So if for example, so if for example the there is not the necessity that that this that the correspondence between the stakeholder groups and staff has to be done rather than the stakeholder groups could transfer if they agree to the right of remedies to their counselors. In that case, it would really facilitate that process because it's only then the correspondence between the counselors and the and staff with having the agreement of the stakeholder groups in the background that they could transfer their proxy votes. So that was my suggestion, and I think we should we may discuss that in the G-Court as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf. Bill.
Okay, thanks. I have to, just to clarify, in case anybody's wondering, since I raised this point on the email list, this is not like a big live operational issue within NCSG. We haven't had a lot of cases, at least in the time that I've been here, where proxy voting was even an issue. I'm just curious about the principle, which, if I understand it, I'm not comfortable with. It seems like, I mean, I'm just now reading the email Ray sent a half hour ago and listening to what Dan was saying. And if I understand correctly, the answer to my question was that indeed you must have a uniform group consensus within your stakeholder group in order to be able to avail yourself of a proxy vote in these cases that don't fall into the absentee category. And the problem, of course, is for some of us, that's not so easy. It's inherent in the nature of the NCSG, especially as it is structured now, that we will have a diversity of views. We will always have a diversity of views. And when I look forward to some of the issues that will be coming down the pike, I imagine we will have even more striking diversity of views amongst our counselors and amongst our members. And so to require that we would necessarily provide uniform group direction to anybody in order to have a proxy vote basically is going to mean that we will lose the proxy vote, because I can imagine lots of cases where we won't be able to get there. So that puts us in a funny kind of position relative to other groups, first of all. But the broader point is, I guess, really, and this goes to some of the issues that came up in Brussels, too, some stakeholder groups have people on, have their counselors on a sort of a tighter leash, and other stakeholder groups allow more latitude for counselors to be able to use their judgments. And if people vote in ways that the members don't agree, then they kick their asses out in the next election. That's representative democracy. So for us, I mean, under the existing NCUC charter, for example, it has been the case that, we've had a procedure where a counselor could transfer his or her vote to another counselor, and that was not very complicated, and they did not have to necessarily give them very specific directions. It seems like now we're saying that's no good. Ray says in his email, well, it's an option each stakeholder group can incorporate into its charter a la carte style. I don't understand how that could be the case. If this is a council requirement for how we're supposed to operate, it would seem to me that you're saying that the NCUC charter is not legal, or that every vote that's been done under that charter in accordance with the principle we have in place has not been correct. So I'm finding it very hard to get my head around why this is necessary in the first place. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't really understand why
it should have to be the case that the group would all uniformly agree on something in order to allocate a proxy vote. But even if that is the requirement, Wendy asked a valid point in the chat on the side. There are different ways to interpret the will of the group. And a group could say we're willing to endorse the discretion of its counselor, in which case the counselor then acts in accordance with their judgment. So I'm just really puzzled. It seems to me, and I'll stop, this is another way in which we're getting into this kind of thing where the kinds of approaches that are comfortable to some groupings are being generalized to all groupings. And I'm not sure that that conforms with the bottom-up democratic blah, blah, blah that we're supposed to have. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. And I'm gonna ask a question that I'm not looking for an answer for because we're out of time. But I think that as we refer this group back to the OSC or to the Standing Committee, whatever we do, that this is a good question and follow up to what you said. If there really is a legitimate concern about some direction coming from the group, would it be sufficient if the group that's involved directed the person voting as a proxy to vote as they see fit? As long as the group agreed to that, would that be sufficient? And again, I'm not looking for the answer for that now. I think that's the kind of thing we can explore, as we go back and look at this. So the discussion's been very good, and I think that we've raised the issue. Bill, with regard to one thing you said, the way I interpreted it wasn't that your charter was wrong. I think the suggestion, as I read it, was that you could change your charter to facilitate this particular process if you wanted to, but whether you do or not is up to you. Now, under the existing procedures, depending on how they're interpreted, you may not be able to have a proxy vote, and we're all concerned about that. So we're on the same page there. So thank you very much. Let's jump to item 6, and I'm going to try to make this one really brief so we don't go over too far. Disclosure of interest procedures. Now, the GCOT has come back with some modified procedures, and I would just like Ray to take 2, 3, 4 minutes to describe that process and why you made the changes maybe with regard to this, besides just the council concerns expressed, but the rationale for the group. Could you do that, Ray?
Sure, I'd be glad to. And by the way, the feedback that you guys are all giving us with regards to proxies and complexities, you know, that's exactly what the GCOT needs. There's open enrollment to the GCOT as far as I'm concerned. You're all welcome to join that and help us out. So in the same breath, you know, we got feedback as it pertains to disclosure of interest, implementing the disclosure of interest procedure, and I'll try to be quick because I think everybody is very familiar with this, and that, you know, there are a lot of confusion with regards to whether the disclosure of interest statement should be written or not. So to alleviate, because of that feedback, the work team revisited that issue and made the recommendation recently to the OSC to have that not be a requirement. Now, the statement of interest, of course, is a requirement to be written and captured for disclosure, but the disclosure of interest was for people to be able to update as they go along at a specific point in time, to be able to verbally, say, announce or state a new disclosure that may have arisen recently pertaining to an issue. That's really the spirit of what that's for. So the edit here is simply taking out the word written in the rules of procedure. As you can probably have seen the document, I hope you'll see that is what the edit. It's just lining out the word written. There was a lot of discussion within the GCOT that pertained to exemptions for staff, ICANN staff, and full-time contractors. That we got a little pushback from ICANN staff on the requirement, the silence, let's say, on the rules of procedure as to whether staff had to or not fill out a statement of interest and have that in written form. To accommodate that, we looked at it and felt that if staff could confirm that all those employed by ICANN or representing ICANN at all times in policy venues, and a public statement like that is made somewhere by ICANN, that would serve as a statement of interest, and the need then for each staff member to fill one out would be, in fact, duplicative or redundant. We felt that was appropriate. So we added that language in. It's 5.2.3.
Go ahead, Ray. Keep going.
Okay. There were various. We heard a lot of feedback about, you know, the complexities to the questions. Of course, this section here was never passed originally by the council. 5.3.3. Its content, with regards to the statement of interest, the questions that were being asked, ran down a slippery slope of other questions that raised from these questions. So we went, investigated that further, looked at it, and really approached it as simplifying the questions, which I think is really what the message was back to us, why they weren't adopted originally by the council, was to simplify that. So I think we have done that, and of course is now under OSC review, and we hope now to be satisfactory. The last part of the changes had to do with 5.4.2, which again had to do with feedback we received back about the procedural bogging down of having to poll participants individually as to their disclosures of interest. It really wasn't intended to bog down procedurally meetings, so we felt the best remedy to this, based on the feedback we were getting, was to simply delete that requirement. We feel the rest of the language, as contained under 5.4.2, adequately captures the duty to remind participants and speakers to disclose, so without the need to stipulate that everybody needs to be polled individually. So that line has been deleted based on the feedback we were receiving. And I think that's it.
Thank you very much, Ray. Tim?
Could you give us an example of what, you know, what a DOI, what it might require a DOI? I mean, if a counselor submits their SOI and it's all up to date and current, what would trigger the need for a DOI that wouldn't require an update to the SOI anyway?
No, actually, that's a good question. So those two go hand in hand. So really, you answered your own question there, and I'm not trying to evade, but when you said that your statement of interest is fully updated, then there isn't. There's not a need to disclose. It would be a situation where, let's say you forgot to update your statement of interest for whatever reason. I don't know. Those should be updated periodically. I think there's a time period of that, like once a year, if I'm not mistaken. But let's just say you forgot, and then you're involved in a conversation. Say you're at the microphone at an ICANN meeting, and you're wanting to say something, and you remember. So this just provides you an opportunity to disclose. That's all. It's really a self-identified procedure. It's at the will of the individual to verbally disclose when they see fit.
So, Ray, just a follow-up question on that then. So if somebody declares and does a DOI in a meeting because their SOI hasn't been updated, then it should follow that their SOI should be updated in writing after that.
Right? That is the spirit of it, yes.
Thanks.
There's not a policing of that. There's not a policing mechanism. But that is the spirit of what it's for, yes.
Thanks. Okay, good. All right, Christina.
Hey, Ray. It's Christina. I have a question about 5.3.3.4.
Mm-hmm.
And I should note that this doesn't affect me personally, because one of the side effects of all of the unbelievable conflict rules I have to follow is that I basically can't own stock. But I have two questions. In order to comply with this, someone seeking to do so actually has to know the identity of any company that has a financial relationship or contract with ICANN. And second, they have to be willing to have their financial information publicly disclosed. What's the status of both of those?
Wasn't a request made that ICANN make that information available? I'm trying to remember, Christina.
Right, and
is this driving to that? Is this driving to that question?
Yeah, in part, because, you know, obviously, and I think I was part of
the reason why this kind of ran into roadblock, because I can't run conflicts checks if I don't have a list against which to check, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this provision seems to embody the same issue, but it actually goes a step further because it seems to suggest that somebody would have to disclose not only the identity of the company that would trigger it, but how much stock they would actually have. And to me, that just goes, I mean, to me, I think we're just getting bordering on the absurd at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree. That's useful feedback. The idea here is, in fact, not to have a situation where you have to do enormous cross-checks on potential conflicts. The idea is simply to allow an individual to self-disclose in a statement of interest what their conflicts are. It is not meant to put the onus on anybody else to produce lists, including ICANN, for you to go internally and have to do conflict checks. It's really not intended for that. The intention of the statement of interest is to allow people to self-identify what their conflicts are, and then they'll be published where anybody can look at them and view them. There's not a policing function here with this. There's not an intent to be in a policing function here, an administrative policing function.
No, I understand that, but my point is that in its current form, until mm-hmm. there is mm-hmm. in fact such a list, it's impossible for me to say with any degree of certainty, no, there isn't somebody in our Beijing office who, you know, 4 years ago worked on a $50,000 transaction for some company that is now a contractor at ICANN.
Yeah.
So, how am I possibly going to know that?
Yeah, so I think when you say that, I believe you're looking, and it's number four, so please list any financial relationship beyond de minimis stock ownership you may have. So I think you in that means you as an individual.
Okay, all right. That's perfect.
Now, with that said, you know, Dan is on the phone. That could be a question for, you know, staff legal. And if that is okay for it to be you, the individual, should we stipulate that better in these rules? Should we define that better? You know, does you mean relevant party? I think it's a very good question, Christina.
Well, because it's an individual making the disclosure, it's fair to assume that it has to be the individual.
That is my assumption, yes.
Okay. Thanks, Christina and Ray. Bill.
Thank you. Again, as with proxy, this has not been much of an issue for my part of the world, but I'm still curious to understand. There's just three things real quick. I don't understand, and this is Adrian and I have been talking in the chat as well about this, and we discussed this on the list as well. SOI pertains to a relevant party's judgment on any matters to be considered by the council, whereas a DOI is on judgment on a specific issue. I cannot understand under normal language how a specific issue is not entailed by any matters. So I can't understand really very clearly exactly why or when one would need to do a DOI relative to the existing protection. The second question had to do with the penalty issue. Now, if I understand what you're saying, okay, there's no policing function, and it does seem that in the language of the operating procedures, there's only a provision for people failed to do an SOI. So a DOI, I guess, doesn't have any kind of strict consequence, like, you know, you get thrown off the council, you're suspended, whatever. But you could be subject to some kind of moral sanction. People think you're a bad person. So it still becomes an issue, it seems to me. It's specifically on the question of indirect interests, and this is something I've just not understood as an academic. Let's say that 2 months from now I decided to write an article in which I touched on something that Gina So did that I was involved in. Am I at risk then that somebody comes back to me and says, hey, why didn't you declare at the beginning that you might write such an article? you know, you're a bad person and so on. Because the whole language around indirect interests and kind of non-material payoffs, I really didn't kind of understand how that works. So if you could just clarify to me exactly what that's about, I would really appreciate it.
Let me try on behalf of the work team, okay? So the idea is that, you know, in these groups, working groups, council meetings, gatherings, whatever you want to call it, there's the ability to earn credibility along the way when you are disclosing things that you feel you should disclose. Now, the audience or the person hearing it may not think it's neither here nor there, but you start to earn a reputation. Again, and it's important to appreciate there's nothing policing going on here. So it's really the intent here is to allow people to, you know, self-disclose things as they feel appropriate along the way. And then the counter to that is, let's say you choose not to, and someone else already knows you are involved, well, they could, you know, bring you out, if you will, and say, you should have disclosed that you were involved in this. And a few times of that happening to somebody, they'll start disclosing on their own. And we feel that over time, as people begin to practice this, it adds a degree of health to the entire organization and a degree of trust going on that not through policing, not through enforcement, but through people acting in a way, in a practice, if you will. That's probably not a real good explanation as the work team was thinking through this, but right now, Bill, that's the best I can probably offer to you.
Thank you, Ray. Stefan, and please be as brief as possible as we've reached the end, and there are a couple things that we have to cover before we finish.
Yeah, I'll try and be as quick as I can. Basically, just hearing Ray's explanation of how the DOI thing came about, I was surprised at that explanation. I think really the DOI isn't necessary at all at this stage. If the intent, now that it's the written obligation has been removed from the rules, if the intent is just to allow people to have a chance to update their SOIs if they've forgotten to do it beforehand, and, you know, all they need to do is simply put their hands up like we used to do at the beginning of every meeting and say that they have an update for their SOI. I don't see why we need another procedure. I think we're just making life too complicated for ourselves.
Thank you, Stefan. What I'd like to suggest, we'll put this on the agenda for the next meeting, hopefully not spending as much time on it because I think, you know, excellent points have been made. For example, Stefan or anyone else who supports Stefan's position, if there's someone could make a motion that we remove the procedures relating to DOI. On the other hand, someone could make a motion that we just make the changes to it that the GCOT has recommended. I think those are two viable alternatives. I don't think we want to leave it the way it is because I think the changes are constructive and helpful. Is there support for just making the changes and leaving the DOI in, or should we not even go down that path? If there is, what I would do is I'd ask David if he would have somebody on his team draft a motion to approve the changes, and of course we could add any other changes we think are important there when we actually deal with the motion. Or would it? Is there more support for doing what Stefan suggested? Again, if you'd use a check mark if you agree. How many of you agree with Stefan's suggestion to get rid of the DOI completely in the procedures? Okay, there's a couple people. Okay, how many think it would be better at this stage to just modify them for now and maybe revisit it later? You take your checks down, okay. Okay, all right, that makes sense, okay. And Bill, did you want to talk again? I guess not. So a lot of you are undecided. Then I'm going to suggest so that we don't, you know, start all over in the next meeting that David, can you have one of your team members or Liz, whichever one you want to take the lead on this, draft a motion to approve the edits and then we can get one of the counselors to submit it just to get it on the table. And then Stefan or someone else for that matter, if you would draft a motion to accomplish what you suggested, we'll have two motions on the table. Obviously, they go against each other, and that's okay. But then between now and then, we can talk with our groups and see what the sentiment is. Bill, did you still have your hands up? Yes?
Sorry, this is Stefan. Just people are asking you on the chat to read the chat. I just want to point out that when you're chairing a meeting, it's difficult to read the chat, so people should just speak up.
I find it very difficult because I have to watch for hands going up and manage the agenda and the time and everything else, so I apologize. I'm not very good at that. But you only have to deal with me in just a couple more meetings. So hopefully the next chair will be able to do that better than me. Stefan, have you been reading the chat? Do you want to?
I just wanted to speak out in your defense there. I know how hard it is to do all that, but people are just supportive of removing the DOI on the chat. But that's three or four people. I'm not sure. That's
okay.
Everybody.
So unless anybody objects, I'll encourage two motions. If nobody makes one of the motions, that's okay too. But, David, you can have someone draft that one motion, and then Stefan, if you can do the other one, and if you need staff help, I'm sure they'd help you. Let's at least, you know, see if somebody will make them and second them, and then we can decide next time on this issue and not drag it out too much longer. I want to jump ahead to 8.2 in the agenda. We're way over time already. Because we've been talking about should we use a standing committee to revisit things like this, or should we use the steering committees until such time that all the GNSO improvements work has been done and approved and it's all in implementation. To keep it quick, Wendy has already expressed the opinion that she thinks it should be the standing committee. Would anyone like to speak to using the steering committees? Raise your hand, please, so I can call on you. I'll speak then. I'm really trying not to monopolize. The reason I have favored going with, and I've stated this on an email, going with using the steering committees is just much more expedient. If we take the example of the disclosures of interest, it's very hard for me to believe that a brand new standing committee where they have to elect a chair and get going again, even though it may involve some of the same people, could have responded nearly as quickly to the disclosures of interest thing because the GCOT is already up to speed on the issues and so forth. So I just think it's much more expedient, as long as there's still work going on, to use the existing groups that are formed in this regard. And in some of these issues, I think resolution is a timely resolution would really help us a lot, including like with the proxy issue that we're talking about right now. And in fact, I raised that question in the registrar's group yesterday and the registry's stakeholder group and the group as a whole supported using the steering committees to do this work, to refer it back to. Are there others besides Wendy who prefer initiating the standing committee? Would you please speak up so that we know? And I apologize for being rushing here, but we're way over time. So, okay, Tim? I assume Tim's getting off mute. We're not hearing you, Tim.
Yeah, sorry again, Chief. It sounds to me like, are you saying that Wendy was suggesting that it be a new steering committee or?
A new standing committee, which was a recommendation of the communications work team that eventually a standing committee be formed to monitor the implementation of the GNSO improvement recommendations. And so it's consistent with what's already established. The question is when do we put that standing committee in place? Should we do it for these issues that are really live right now while other GNSO improvements work is still going on? and let them take care of. For example, we could have referred the disclosure of interest policy to the new standing committee rather than referring it back to the OSC and ultimately to the GCOT. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. Do you have a preference? Yeah.
Well, I guess my preference would be that we, if we can use the existing steering committee as that standing committee, that would be the best move. But I'd be interested in understanding the objections to that or whatever more clearly, I guess. I hadn't understood that before, that there was objection to it.
Yeah, Wendy, do you want to comment on that? Okay. All right. Stefan?
Yeah, I've said this before, but I really do feel that a fresh set of eyes would be useful here. I actually wonder if we shouldn't, this is probably a joke, but I'm not sure it is, if we shouldn't bar ex-council members from participating in the new committee, but and get real, you know, a really fresh set of eyes on this. But I definitely think a fresh set of eyes would be useful.
Yeah, of course, then it's going to take a lot longer to do because they're going to have to come up to speed, whereas the existing committee is coming up to speed.
Could we not have some kind of, is there not some kind of way, I understand that problem, we've discussed it before, isn't there some kind of way of having both the OSC, for example, and the GCOT and the standing committee working together, with the standing committee just being there to provide that freshness and not redo the work that the OSC and the GCOT's done already?
Can I just respond?
Yes, Tim.
Sure. Yeah. The Stefan, the concern I have with that is just the, you know, when we figure out how to get, you know, bigger numbers of volunteers involved in these things, then maybe something like that could work. But my concern is that, you know, if we say, well, counselors can't participate and we don't want to use a certain committee, that we're going to cut out a big share of the volunteers we normally use for these things. And in this case, it's not a matter of, you know, that I think in this case, maybe fresh eyes may not be the best thing in that we would want a group that are familiar, very familiar with the recommendations or policies or whatever that are going to be implemented, so that they can make sure that they're implemented. They're not making anything new or evaluating or making any judgment. They're just making sure the implementation moves forward. So being familiar with it, I think, might actually be a plus.
Well, we don't seem to have clear agreement unless it's showing up in the chat, which I'm not reading. I'm on a...
Jack,
yes.
Can I just say that, I mean, what Tim has just said does make a lot of sense, and that's why it's such a difficult question. But I do agree that experience and understanding of these issues do appear crucial. Maybe we do need to be clear on what it is we're trying to do with this steering committee. If it's, once again, if we're just trying to redo what the OSC and the GCOT's already been doing, you know, for the past few months, then perhaps there's no need for the standing committee at all. It is true that if we're bringing in people that don't have any experience at all, then that the learning curve will be steep and they may not be able to provide us with the kind of answers that we're looking for.
And keep in mind, like Ray said, that new people can join these teams. So we can get fresh eyes doing that. Unless there's any really strong objection, and so that we can get some work being done on the voting procedures right away, I would like to just make a ruling that we send it back to the steering, the OSC, on the voting procedures, and that they solicit the feedback that people have been providing. They probably already have it all, but certainly solicit more to make sure that they cover all the issues with regard to the voting procedures. And if somebody wants to revisit this and form that standing committee sooner, we can still do that. But for the sake of getting this one issue dealt with, I'm going to rule that way so that we don't go, you know, keep going longer and longer on this meeting. Quickly going to item 7, the planning for the Cartagena meeting. Sorry to put you 50 minutes after the close of the meeting, Stefan and Glenn, but let me turn it over to you to make a few comments and ask any questions that you have.
Hey, Chuck, can I just say one thing, because it is, we are running so late. Just the one thing that I would need from people, Kurt has confirmed to us, Glenn and myself, once again, thanks to Glenn for all the help she's been providing. Kurt has confirmed to us that he would be available for a slot on Sunday morning to talk to the council from 10:30 till 1 o'clock. But he has requested, if possible, that councillors in advance let him know what topics they would like to discuss with him. So perhaps that can be taken to the list, but if people, you know, have an idea of the questions they'd like to put to Kurt, that would probably be useful. And I can speak about the rest of the schedule at the next meeting.
Okay. One thing, that's on new GTLD, is the session with Kurt, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So in other words, Kurt has asked, so Glenn, let's make sure we get a request out for questions in advance, not only from counselors, but anybody in the GNSO, that they now, that it may be easier to draft those once information is posted on the next guidebook, if there is one posted. So it may not be possible to do that right now, but let's keep that alive and make sure that we get those in advance and that those are going to have the priority in that session. Thanks. I'm going to make one comment on the planning. The agenda for our council meeting and other meetings, for that matter, the agendas are due by the 15th of November. So before we have our next council meeting, we're going to have to post those. So what I'm going to do, and what I ask other people who are leading any of the meetings on the weekend or whatever, is to and it can be a high-level agenda. It doesn't have to be the nitty-gritty detail. In the case of the council, you know, what happens on the 18th of November will significantly impact our agenda in Cartagena. So I will draft one for the meeting on Wednesday and any other meetings that I'm chairing and distribute it on the council list and ask people to please respond. We'll also put something out on I don't know that we necessarily need a – there will be something coming out even after this meeting regarding meetings with the GAC and the CCNSO, so you'll see something on that. But I'm going to have to ask people to respond on the list because the deadline is 15 November for posting of agendas. And, again, it won't be a detailed agenda as we normally have, but high a level enough so that people know what the topics are for that meeting. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, Christina.
I'm happy to take this to the list or we can put it on the agenda for next time, but I do think, at least at the request of the IPC, that we should have a discussion about the weekend sessions and the extent to which some members of the community may feel that under the new operating guidelines, and I mean lowercase, not uppercase, that they can't really meaningfully participate. Again, happy to take it out of the list or put it on for next meeting, but I do think it's important that we discuss it before Cartagena.
So would you send in an email to the list just requesting that so that I don't miss it? I'm very, very supportive of that myself. So
not a problem.
But with everything going on, that would help me if you do that. Thanks, Christina.
Certainly.
I appreciate that. Glenn, did you have anything else that you need to say on the planning for Cartagena?
No, thank you, Chuck. Just if people have got comments and would like something changed on the agenda, would they let me know, please?
Yeah.
And also, as far as the agendas are concerned, you have probably seen on the calendar page that I have linked to every date a wiki page, and that wiki page is probably got empty right now, but we can fill it up as we go along, so it does give people an idea of the agendas.
Thank you, Glenn, very much. quickly jumping to 8-1. I'll take 30 seconds on this. The drafting team on the SSR working group charter writing is well underway and anticipates having something by the November 15th deadline, so the possible charter could be considered in Cartagena. And it's not the working group itself. This is just a drafting team for a charter that the SOs and the ACs will approve. Certainly, if you have any questions on that, ask them on the list. On 8-3, I want to quickly jump to that. We really, you know, the procedures are, Glenn's going to send the procedures out as soon as possible on the election process for chair and the houses need have an action item in the next 2 weeks to come up with a nominee for chair. And the also, I would like to ask each of you to make sure that you also state whether or not, as a house, you want to make any changes to the NCA assignment that you have. Now, in the case of the contracted party house, Terry will no longer be on the council, so the contracted party house will need to make a decision between the the other three. Obviously, if the non-contracted party house continues want to have Olga in that house, there would need to be discussion if there was mutual interest in that direction. So all I'm asking is make sure that the houses in the next 2 weeks come up with a nominee for chair, communicate it as instructed on the list, and then also come up with your recommendation for NCA assignment to your house in the next 2 weeks as well. Any questions on that? Finally, note that the RAA final report on the proposals for improvements to the agreement has been posted, and we will put that on the agenda for our next meeting on the 18th of November. Anything else before I adjourn the meeting? I apologize for rushing through the end, but I'm trying to respect your time as well. So thank you very much, everybody. Hopefully we'll have lots of activity on the list. Have a good rest of the day. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Bye, all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Mary? Mary?
Yes, this is Mary.
Thank you. Will you stop the recording, please?
Yes, I will. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you.
Bye.